Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 102 of Season 5 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is the Prince of Thieves from Minute of Thieves, or the Head Prince of Thieves. I don't know. What would you call you? Maybe a King of Thieves? I don't know. Travis Bowe. Welcome back, Travis. How would you refer to yourself?
Man, I've never, that question hasn't really been put to me before in terms of, I'm just Travis of the Bow.
Okay. Travis of the Bow. Why not? Actually that fits in with, with Robin Hood. There yeah. You go. Is there a connection? Are you a descendant of Robin Hood?
I cannot reveal that at this time.
Where does the name Bow come from? What's the origin?
I believe.
Do you have any idea?
I know there's a in France. There's a church called Saint Mary Le Bow. Bow spelled the same way. It's hard to find it probably just comes from.
Where do your ancestors come from? Bow maker
or. I'm all over the place. England, Scotland. There's some. I think pretty much Scotland, England, and I'm a mutt. Yeah, it's all over the place.
All right, well, maybe then you could actually be a descendant of Robin of, yeah. of Loxley, who uses a boat. I don't know.
Yeah,
anything's possible.
I'm not ruling it out.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Always keep your options open. You never know when it'll help you in the future. If you happen to meet Kevin Costner one day and say, hey. I am possibly a descendant of you. Who knows?
Yeah.
Of your character. How's that? There you go.
And that's when I'll be escorted out of whatever
venue
that yes. Kevin Costner and I would be at the same place.
Yeah, why not? All right. So Minute 102 begins with Holly punctuating her comment and ends with Grant saluting Stuart. So yesterday we ended things with Holly zapping Thornburg, and he had made a comment basically saying, if this should be my last, for some reason I keep thinking recording, it's not recording, that's what we do nowadays. I was going to say, if this should be my last podcast, no, if this should be my final broadcast, that's what he says, broadcast. Who uses the word broadcasting anymore? Now right. It's podcasting, Thornburg would be a good podcaster these days, I guess. It's probably the only work that he can get these days anyway.
Right.
Especially with all the lawsuits pending from the McLeans. Who knows? So, yes, he says, if this should be my last broadcast, and then Holly zaps him and then says, amen to that. And then this minute begins with her just saying, dick. So we got into that conversation a few months ago where we were talking about, where the name dick comes from, and obviously here. It has numerous meanings of what she's talking about. Especially the way that she says it. It's a very condescending tone, basically calling him a schmuck, more or less.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to.
Has it come up that this actor, William Atherton, the other main role that probably everyone thinks of with him in this era is Ghostbusters.
Of course.
And the famous line being, this man has no dick. Has that come up? Do you think him Richard Dick here is any way you know him as being a man with no dick. So let's just call him Dick.
It could be because again, in the season that we did for Die Hard 2 seasons ago, it did come up the connection between, him also being in Ghostbusters, where is he a bigger actor? That was the biggest question. But okay. I don't think anyone ever pointed out the way you just did so well that there's possibly a connection here, but the connection would have been made in the first Die Hard. It wouldn't have been made here because when the character was created, because if I remember correctly, this character does not appear in the Roderick Thorpe novel. If I remember correctly, anyone out there who remembers the novel and knows that I'm wrong, feel free to let me know. But I have a feeling that he's not mentioned. I think they just decided to bring him in to help out with the way that the story was going in that one, and then they brought him back here. I'm actually glad they didn't bring him back for With a Vengeance, because that would have just been too much. The
Sure.
same way they didn't bring
Yeah.
back Reginald L. Johnson for that one. It would have just been too
Right.
much of a coincidence that we're in a third location where we're able to put all of these main characters together. I mean, come
Yeah.
on. We all know that Holly's not even in the third one
Holly's not
either.
even in it.
Well,
Yeah.
there she
Yeah.
her voices. We get her
She's,
voiced on
well,
we get
yeah.
what's supposed to be her
A
voiced.
voice.
Yes, a voice, which in a few seasons we'll get there, and maybe we'll be able to find out somewhere, whose voice that is, whether Bonnie Bedelia, gave her voice just for that line or not. I don't know. We shall have to wait and find that out. Holly says it very matter-of-factly, the way that she says it. She just calls him, amen to that, Dick. And then we hear on the phone, Dick, we're live. Dick, where are you now? Dick. And so, I mean, it's
We
done
didn't
really
really
well.
talk yesterday about. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. What?
What were you saying?
Go ahead.
We just didn't really talk about the way he kind of flops into the corner after being zapped. Just how I think most people tend to play it like they get knocked out, but his eyes never really close. He looks out of it, but not unconscious. And that's the way we leave him in this minute. I like the way the flight attendant just closes the door on him.
That's right. It's like we're gonna give you back your privacy. Just
Yeah.
gonna close the door, no problem. And she smirks, because I mean she did
Yeah.
have, at the beginning of the movie, I think this was maybe in week three or four, I think it was in week four, where they had the big argument with him about whether his programs are done in a way that is all very ob an objective look
Oh,
at
right.
air travel.
Yeah.
That type of thing. So she smirks as she closes the bathroom door.
Yeah.
And she's happy about that.
I feel like when she closes the door, that, and I can't remember now what the state of the passengers are like right now. I can't remember what they know, what has been, told to the passengers at this point.
Well,
But as she
anyone listening
closes,
to the newscast knows what's going on.
okay. I couldn't remember if it had been kind of broadcast, around the plane yet, or if it was,
Yeah, that's what prompted Holly to get up. She that was the end of
okay.
last week, where she picked up the headphones to listen in, because she saw his face on
Okay.
the screen, and
That's
then.
right. Okay. So yeah, when the flight attendant is closing the door, I feel like I hear a very generic like screaming in the background. It's very light. It's very just like a wall of sound, kind of white noise, like not white noise, but like studio created crowd voice, and
Crowd, like panic,
it
you're saying panic voice or just
kind of
crowd voice?
panic. Yeah, it sounds very panic, but then it also sounds like it could be coming from it feels like a mixture of things. Like, if I know it's not typical that you would have TV audio playing from multiple sources on a plane, yeah, that's why they have the headphones, but it almost feels like I got like two or three TVs on at the same time and I'm hearing all of it mixed together at once. And so it sounds a little bit like screaming and it sounds a little bit like, a music video playing. Like it just sounds like it's a weird wall of sound noise that's coming out that I can't tell what it's supposed to be. It doesn't sound like the, we just need it to sound like people in casual conversation, just that sort of thing. It's just an
Well,
odd bit of sound that I don't know what it's intended to be,
okay, I
but.
mean, but last week, before Holly, when she went into her seatmate's bag, okay,
Yeah.
so her seatmate was arguing with one of the stewardesses right before that. So the question is, everyone is very concerned at this point.
Yeah.
They apparently everyone recognizes Thornburg. on the screen because, you know, he interrupted an episode of The Simpsons. So what do you expect, you know?
Yeah.
Especially when this was like the fourth episode of The Simpsons that they showed.
Right.
You know, so no one really knew really who The Simpsons were, but they were trying to figure it out. You know, I don't know. Do you have anything else before about the plane before we move to the next scene?
No.
Nope. Okay. All right. Good. So then the shot changes and we actually finally get to see for sure which of the bad guys survived. So we see Khan standing there on the empty road, looking out, and we see a truck that appears out of nowhere, and it actually looks as if the truck skids a little bit as it's driving towards them.
I thought so too. Yeah.
You know, it's like the stunt driver did a nice job of skidding along the way, trying to make it seem as if it's really icy and and it's slushy and we know it's all fake. So
right.
You know, there isn't any real snow there. And then Khan picks up his walkie-talkie and goes, truck lights approaching, sir. They're here, right on schedule. So it works really well. That I was happy to see, because we talked about this 2 weeks ago. We weren't really sure who the two guys were that John shot on the snowmobiles. You know, we assumed that they were, according to the script, one of them was Garber, which is the second in command, but the other one, we weren't sure if it was Burke or maybe it was Khan, because the two of them, Burke is John Leguizamo, right?
Yeah, I when I watched the movie the other day for first time in so long, I thought, I'm pretty sure that's John Leguizamo. I had no idea, so, and then like a little bit later, you get Robert Patrick.
Yeah, sure.
I looked through the cast list, at IMDb, and I was surprised to see like Mark Boone Jr.
That's right.
There's this
that was shot. He was shot.
Full of like,
he was one of the first guys to get killed.
I don't recall seeing him.
I didn't until I,
what's that?
I didn't recall seeing him until I, was watching this minute by minute. And then he was the first guy shot at the, when they were fighting the SWAT guys. He's actually Mark Boone Jr.'s character is the only bad guy not killed by John in this whole movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Huh. So he has that distinction, and he does not look anything like we all know he looks like now. He was clean shaven, and his hair was cut to a military length.
Fairly military.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was most of them. Tom Everett, he's one of the plane guys. Mm-hmm.
That's right. We'll get him a little bit this week.
Yeah, just full of that guy like character actors.
Correct.
that I was surprised. Even the guy Khan.
That's right.
Tom Verica.
That's right.
Like I know I've seen him.
Right.
You know, it was like when I saw him in this minute and at the start of tomorrow's minute, I was like, I know I've seen that guy before.
That's right.
So I had to look him up.
Tom Verica. You know. I talked about it again, I know him mostly from, he's had a lot of parts, a lot of small parts and things.
Yeah.
But I know mostly from the Earth to the Moon. He played Dick Gordon.
Oh, okay.
So he was in like two or three episodes of From the Earth to the Moon. So I
gotcha.
I actually just rewatched From the Earth to the Moon a few weeks ago for the anniversary of the moon landing. So, I was reminded again of Tom Verica from there, so I was happy to see that he's one of the guys who survived,
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously we get to see, in the next shot, we get to see Vondi Curtis Hull, who also was an unknown actor at this point,
Right.
He's the other guy who, it's the two of them that survived. I mean, basically think about it. There were 12 of them. And then there's three, that have made it to this stage. So, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I know Vondi Curtis Hall mostly just from Daredevil on Netflix.
Oh, really? I actually know him from
as Ben Urich.
For me, he's Chicago Hope. He was on Chicago Hope.
Okay. I watched a little bit of that, but not much.
Right. Okay. That's fair. And then the shot switches to Stuart, and Stuart then, is talking into the walkie-talkie, and he goes, "The hangar door, open it. Clockwork." So he does that really well, and we see that Esperanza then takes a puff from his cigar. I wonder if it's the same cigar that he lit up when he was on the plane. Like, where's he getting all the cigars from?
Yeah, isn't it a thing though with cigars that you can kind of put them out and then keep them for a while and light them up again?
Like, isn't from that... what I know, I mean, I don't
yeah
But again, he was shot. So, like, where did he pick it
Yeah,
up
yeah.
from?
I kept thinking, like, there's a little bit of blood on his
Well,
shoulder,
because he got
but I
shot.
kept
He
thinking,
got
like,
shot in the
isn't.
arm, and but he's still using that arm
Yeah,
to puff away on this.
right. I kept thinking, like, shouldn't one of his arms be in a sling or, isn't. I couldn't remember, like, how badly he was shot,
Just
but.
wait, later this week he's going to be flying a plane with that arm too.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
he just was winged.
He ain't got time to bleed.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, was it I'll bleed when I'm dead or something like that? Isn't that no, it's I'll sleep when I'm dead. I
Yeah.
think it was I'll sleep when I'm dead.
Oh.
I think that was it. I'll bleed when I'm dead or I'll sleep when I'm dead. Yeah, same thing.
Yeah, both work.
Yeah. And then we see the hangar doors open up. And so one of the things that really gets me about this is that did you notice how many crew members, ground crew members there are?
Yeah,
Now,
I paid attention to those too. And they're not being forced to work at gunpoint or anything.
forget about that. I mean, there was a scene a few 2 weeks ago where Stewart said, make sure you have a ground crew there. And Grant said, "You come on, you don't need a ground crew. We don't need to give you extra hostages." And then we get here,
Oh,
and
yeah.
there's a full ground crew. I mean, there's tons of guys
Yeah.
here. It's just unbelievable how many there are. And every time I've seen this movie before, and I always just thought that for some reason those were part of the bad guys. It never even dawned
Sure.
on me until I was doing it this way, about how many of them there are. And we see the
Yeah.
plane is this huge cargo plane. And I mean, I mentioned yesterday that Rennie Harlan mentions that this was done on a soundstage, and they had to build the plane there, and they basically couldn't get it out. It was like it was something they
Wait,
had to.
what? That's
That's what he said.
just not a real plane that
It's
seems like they just go to an airport and like, hey, can we just take a couple shots next to your plane,
But he said that, I don't know. That's what he said on the on. Maybe I misheard him, but that's what he said on the on the commentary. It was very strange. He was talking about
Yeah.
how difficult it was filming these shots because the plane barely fit in the hangar.
Huh. I mean that might be like maybe this plane doesn't typically reside in this hangar, but maybe they just wanted the shot of, these doors opening and you see this massive plane.
Right. I think that's what they wanted to show is how big this plane is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't really know if he needed it, but
Yeah.
I don't know. So I mean, it got me thinking about plane hangars. When do you think they started the idea of plane hangars?
I'm guessing pretty early, considering a lot of those early planes were made out of materials that weren't, metal and, some a lot of it was, so those early planes were wood and canvas and, materials that you probably wouldn't want getting soaking wet a lot. So I'm guessing that they started putting planes in hangars pretty early.
Okay, and you would be right.
I could be
You would
wrong.
be right. They
Okay.
did. So hangars are used for protection from weather, direct sunlight, or to use for maintenance, repair, manufacturing, assembly, or storage of an aircraft. The Wright brothers actually stored and repaired their aircraft in a wooden hangar constructed in 1902 for the first glider. So the idea was that okay, it's best to keep your plane indoors. I think that's the idea of it.
Yeah.
And it makes
Makes
sense.
sense.
Of course, it
Yeah.
makes a lot of sense. And you have different size of hangars and stuff like that about
Yeah.
how tall they are and stuff like that. Like you have most you have like small hangars that are about 30 meters high, medium could be up to 60, large is up to 90, extra large is up to 120. And double extra large is anything beyond 120. There's really no like regulation of how
Yeah.
large it should be, but the idea is that there still are regulations for building codes and stuff like that. In August 2014, the FAA actually proposed legislation on how a hangar can be used on airfields. But
It's impressive that they can build a building this large. And it's not like it's a, you know, I've been in enough warehouses where I know you need support, you know, every, 50 feet, you need a steel support beam going up to support the roof. Like, you can't have that here because you got to be able to drive a plane out of it. That's so right.
Well, no, you just have a higher roof.
It's crazy that. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so it makes sense. You know, and then we see the how huge the plane is compared to the truck, because they give us a shot of the truck next to the plane, which is great. Mm-hmm. It's really just trying to show how big this airplane is, which I'm assuming most airplanes, you know, are at least this similar height.
Yeah.
You know, most commercial aircraft type of thing.
I forget. Did they specify when they asked for a plane? Did they specify this plane? You know.
They said they wanted a cargo plane.
Okay.
Wanted a cargo converted plane.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. They wanted something big.
Yeah. Yeah. It took me a while to realize that this was a cargo plane. Because to me, any plane that looks like this, like that typical, you know, I don't know that this is a Boeing, you know, but it looks to me like a Boeing 747. That's just the typical passenger plane that I think of. Mm-hmm. When I'm thinking about planes like this.
Right.
And so when I think of a cargo plane, I'm thinking of like a C-130, which is more like what the general flew in on. Mm-hmm. So that I was kind of surprised later when I realized this was a cargo plane, like that it's this style of cargo plane instead of like that more military style cargo plane.
Right. And to me, the biggest question is why do they need a cargo plane?
I don't know. Like,
what are they?
Yeah.
They're not transporting anything. Yes, they have 30 guys that need to get into it. Okay. But you can put 30 guys into a plane.
Yeah.
You know, is it, you know, as they say, smoke and mirrors, you know, is it the type of thing that they're trying to make them believe something? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. It could be not that they have plans in the future of using. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. And then the shot changes, and we're back, and we see John walking with Coleman. And, you know, he apparently seems as if he's keeping her up to date on what is needed. And she goes, "Geez, you give me this story, and I'll have your baby." And then he looks at her and goes, "Not the kind of ride I'm looking for." You know, you'd think that a reporter like her would probably not, you know, assume, you know, that she's willing to give sex for this type of thing.
Right.
You know, it's a very strange line to come from her.
It's also a strange line from him, not the kind of ride, you know, it's,
yeah,
it's also delivered like he waits a second and almost like delivers it to camera almost.
Do you think it was ad-libbed?
Maybe. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's in the script.
Well, when we get to the script, we'll see. Okay. We'll see. Okay. We'll see when we get to the script whether it's there or not. I'm asking, what do you think? What's your opinion? Do you think it is? I honestly don't remember at this point. You know, when we get to the script, though, we'll go through it and we'll see if it's there. But what do you think?
I'm betting it was written, because I feel like it's her line is just a setup for his line, and so if they're both an improv, you know, maybe. But I'm guessing it's scripted. It's just I find that the delivery of his line is the one of the only that feels very one-linery. It feels very acty. You know, it doesn't feel like a typical Bruce Willis, John McClane sort of line, I guess. But
okay,
I don't know. I like what the implication here is. Because this is the first mention of ride that we get. And so I like the way, you know, the previous minute we see John approaching Sam and then it cuts away. And I like that this, there's been a passage of time. And so we learn really quickly that he's worked out some kind of arrangement that he needs a ride somewhere. I thought they had a news van, so I wasn't expecting, you know, what they were going to get into vehicle-wise. So that was a little bit of a surprise. But I think it's good storytelling. It's just like it keeps it moving forward, and we're figuring it out. You know, we don't need to, you know, we don't need her to say, yes, I'm going to give you a ride, and in exchange, I'm going to get this story. Like, we don't need all that. So
that's right.
Yeah, it's good.
It's true. And that's all we basically get of the two of them. It's like a few seconds, and then it just, you know, we see them walking through the crowd, and that was it. And then it comes back to the hangar. And I love the way that they open the shot where we see all this, you know, I guess you could say dandruff falling on the ground.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, we know it's not real snow, but it's just, you know, someone was just piling fake snow on the ground to make it look like that they've now brushed it off the truck.
You think they would have gotten some slushy ice, you know, and just dumped it on the ground right there to make it look like they've been. They've driven up, you know, there's no wet tire tracks leading up to this.
Nope, none at all.
Yeah.
And they were slipping and sliding, so you never know. And then, you know, Grant jumps out of the truck along with a few of his other men, you know, and then the shot changes and we see Stuart and Esperanza walking down the stairs, you know, of the plane. You know, they both look very regal the way that they're walking down. You know, you're just waiting to see one of them, like, wave, you know, like the queen would wave or something like that, you know, as they're walking down, you know, giving, like, a very a royal wave or whatever you want to call it. You know, and they walk down towards Grant, and then Grant, you know, sees them, and everyone's smiling, and then Grant walks up to him, and quickly, so they salute each other as they're doing it. You know, you have a few of the guys from Blue Light looking on. I like the fact that we still can see the red tape on their ammo, you know, on their ammo pack, the magazines. Yeah, it's very good. And once again, we see Khan in the background. You know, he's the only one not in white, but he's still there. You know. I guess it looks like he's securing the area or something like as the two of them are saluting one another.
I like that when the doors open for the hangar, like it kind of lingers on him, like as the truck drives into the building in a way, like he's in the center of the frame, just backing up and on guard, on alert. And you just get this interesting silhouette of just him backing into the building. And then, he approaches the general and everything. He's still very much, like, keeping an eye out on things.
That's right. Yeah, I think that's he does that really well. And then Grant starts talking and says, Colonel, if I may say so, you are some piece of work. And then the minute gets cut off as he's doing that.
I feel like, that's in tomorrow's minute, I believe.
Well, he just says Colonel. I think Colonel is the only thing that he gets to say here. Mm. But or maybe part of Colonel as he's starting to say it, something like that. Yeah, well, we'll get a little bit more into that tomorrow about how that is. You have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
Only like as I was watching, kind of letting the minute loop in the background back when Sam was offering to have John's baby. There's like a North Santa's North Pole kind of diorama sort of thing that they've built, you know, behind the crowd there. Like
outdoors.
I guess there's like a little like maybe this is where like at a mall when you go to take the kids to see Santa. Like maybe I guess it seems like a weird thing for an airport to do. Like come to the airport.
Well, it seems a weird thing Santa. To be outside of the airport.
That's I don't know. I can think of Home Alone. There's like an outdoor Santa's workshop sort of thing outside. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yeah, I don't know. But that's all I got.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's fair. And you'd think that the odds are they didn't build this themselves. That's probably something that was already there. Maybe in the pictures that you mentioned yesterday from the Denver airport, we can get that if these scenes were shot around Christmas themselves.
Mm.
You know, you never know.
Yeah.
All right. So the script starts off with where we're at the airport at night. It, you know, we there was nothing they really added about about Dick in the bathroom, Dick Thornburg in the bathroom. It says McLean, Sam, and the cameraman forced their way through the crowd. Sam absorbing what McLean's told her. Jesus, you give me this story, I'll have your baby. McLean goes, thanks, but I'm looking for a different kind of ride. So there you go. It's in the script. And then it says, and he and she points to her news helicopter. And at that point, the script goes to the hangar, and it says, Stewart and his remaining men on guard at doors on high scaffolds to look out at the landing field hidden in the driving snow. Stewart looks at his watch. Now, again, it's just really funny that it says Stewart and his remaining men when, we've established that there's three of them. And then it says outside of the hangar, Burke here on watch. So again, according to the script, Burke is still alive at this point. John Leguizamo. Something gleams in the distance. He speaks into his radio. Truck lights. Inside the hangar, weapons are cocked. Soldiers' muscles coil. Stewart into the scrambled radio. Hatchling, report in. What is your position? Grant's voice. My position is I'm gonna get my ass reamed out of this best goddamn soldier on the planet because I'm 2 minutes late. Stewart grins, signals for the hangar door to be open. The big door rumbles upwards. There's the truck, headlights now illuminating the waiting plane. Grant jumps down from the cab, grabs a warm greeting from Stewart, and the headlight beams. Grant salutes him. So again, I don't like this that much. I like it better in the movie. I think that we don't need that line of Grant saying that, that I'm no longer a good soldier because I'm 2 minutes late. Like, who cares? Show up 2 minutes late. That's fine. Or you don't even have to tell us that you're late, and that's it. Okay, so every Tuesday we have a segment called Disaster Tuesday, where basically, this is an homage to the Midnight Boys, who what they did on the Titanic Minute, where every week they would talk about different boating disasters. So I talk about different plane.
Fighting the urge to just scream wreck of the week.
It could be Frick of the Week is fine too. So I try and find some interesting stories of people who unfortunately were killed in plane crashes. Most of them are famous people. The one I chose for this week is probably someone that nobody has ever heard of. I would be very surprised if you actually have heard of this. Have you heard of the name Mitsuyasu Maino?
No.
Okay, so he was a Japanese actor who was also an activist, and in March 1976, he carried out a suicide attack on a on someone who was a multimillionaire right-wing leader and leading figure in the Lockheed bribery scandals.
Wow.
Basically, what he tried doing was fly his plane into this man's mansion and
Jeez.
to kill him. Okay, so basically in early March 1976, he flew around the neighborhood that this guy Kodama lived in, trying to get information and prepare for the attack. And on the morning of March 23rd, 1976, he arrived in Tokyo Airport, in Chofu Airport in Tokyo with two friends. All of them were dressed in the uniforms of kamikaze pilots,
Man.
from World War II.
Yeah.
And they actually informed airport officials that they were renting two planes in order to film a segment for a kamikaze segment of a film. Okay, which is actually pretty smart for actors to do it that way, I guess you could say. They started taking pictures, and they were posing in uniform with white scarves and rising sun images and a headband and things like that. And so he got into one plane, and his two companions got into the other, and they flew around Tokyo for an hour. And then he told his friends that he had business in the neighborhood where Kodama was living, and the other plane, which had the cameraman on board, basically film was continued filming what was going on. He flew over Kodoma's house, circling twice before diving into the building.
Jeez.
Yeah. And he apparently called out the number of the plane right before crashing and said, "Sorry, I haven't replied for a long time. Long live the Emperor." And then crashed into the building. He ended up hitting the second floor of the house, and he obviously was killed in the crash. The crash created a fire, and two servants were slightly injured. The Kodoma himself was resting in another part of the building during the attack, so he wasn't injured, and he ended up getting out of there without a problem. He had Yakuza bodyguards with him that were able to quickly put out the fire. And reporters showed up on the scene, and the guards got upset and started attacking the reporters.
Man.
So I mean, this was and then right-wing demonstrators arrived on the scene and started clashing with police in front because at first people thought that it was a conspiracy, and then they realized that it was something that he had done and acted on his own.
What an elaborate,
So.
murder suicide plot.
Seriously, and it didn't work.
Yeah. Man.
Apparently the guy Kodoma was put on trial for all of the crimes that they claimed that he committed for the bribery scandal and stuff like that. But while he was in the, it took 7 years for this trial, and in the middle of the trial he actually had a stroke and died.
Man.
So, that is Disaster Tuesday for us this week. So, Travis, you want to once again tell people where they can find Travis Bell?
Sure. I do another podcast called Real Comic Heroes, and over there we go through a big list of comic book movies. We go in release order. We started in with Superman and the Mole Men from 1951. As of this recording, we are in 1998. We just did Dark City and what was the other one? Batman, Mr. Freeze, Sub-Zero. We've got a David Hasselhoff, Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV movie that's coming up next, and then I think the Mask of Zorro. So hitting a bunch of different stuff, and yeah, check that out. It's Real Comic Heroes, real with two E's, and yeah, enjoy.
All right, cool. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcast you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, or you can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay.
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little village.